You are listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
Your Honor, given that, the state would make a motion to excuse juror 1353 for cause.
Judge, can we approach?
Yes.
Instruction that says Mr. Daybell or Chad doesn't have to take the stand and you can't hold it against him. Will you folks follow that and agree to follow that?
Yes.
Thank you. The other thing is that he doesn't have to present any evidence. If he decides not to present a single shred of evidence, he doesn't have to do that. He doesn't have to say anything. He doesn't have to do anything. And if the state doesn't meet their burden and in some way falls short, does everybody understand that the verdict needs to be not guilty?
Yes.
Okay. I want to go back a little bit to what Ms. Blake talked about in terms of an agreement. Does everybody understand what the word agreement means? You sure if you all understand what agreement means? And I'm going to, I left it over here, excuse me. I'm going to go to 1577, and I want you to ask or tell me what you think an agreement is.
Agreement to me is two people.
Well, let's make it easy. Does it have to be in writing?
No.
Does anybody believe an agreement has to be in writing? Can it be done verbally?
Yes.
Okay, so there has to be some sort of verbal statement to each other and say, we have an agreement, right? And shake on it. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Does anybody disagree with that? Anybody? Well, I'm going to go down here first because I haven't heard from 1537, so go ahead.
I don't think you need to shake on it.
Okay. Verbally, you have to sort of speak the magical words. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And then 1353.
Yes.
What do you think about that?
Well, it's like in marriage. You say, I do, but you also have a signed marriage license. So there's a legal document there. It says that you're married. You can't just say, I love you and I marry you and be married. It doesn't work like that.
So if you beat around the bush and say, you know, I kind of like you, I wouldn't mind spending some time with you and just make general representations about things. But, you know, it's not particularly clear that you said, I do. Should somebody force them and say, well, you said I do, so you're married. Is that fair?
No.
So just beating around the bush and everything else, that's not really an agreement, is it?
No.
When it comes to marriage or anything else, right?
No, it's an opinion. Right.
At 1185, you're shaking your head. Do you agree with that? I'm sorry. You're shaking your head. So I'm going to go to 1219. I want to hear your thoughts on what you think is necessary for an agreement.
Well, I have an interesting example. I agreed to sell my father a gun over the phone, and later on found out it was worth a lot more. Then I backed out. We haven't spoken since.
Okay.
So he thought that was an agreement, and I honestly entered into it as an agreement.
Okay.
And then found out some more evidence, changed my mind, and backed out.
Okay. So let me ask you this. What if he had just said to you, and we're going to get back to the marriage thing too, because that's actually a really great example. But what if he had said to you, and what kind of gun are we talking about?
Just a gallery gun.
Okay.
22 Magnum.
Okay. What if he had just said to you, boy, I like that Magnum. And you said, I bet you do like it. In fact, it's black, it shoots straight all the time, and I've never had it fail on me. Do you guys have an agreement to sell that gun?
No.
Why?
It's really hard for me to answer.
All right, well, is it possible that you didn't come to eye to eye and say, yeah, we've joined in this and we're going to be doing this together?
In this particular case, the the value of the gun changed
right
from what we thought it was.
But leaving that aside, I'm just talking in general, just saying, you know, that's a black gun. It's always shoot straight for me. And there was never any discussion specifically about buying it or selling it. Just describing the gun, talking about the subject, discussing the topic.
No,
is that an agreement? Okay, 1503. Is that an agreement? I am blessed, and she's, you know, well, maybe I shouldn't say that. I am a lucky man. I have an absolutely gorgeous girlfriend, okay? Beautiful girlfriend. And this is going to kick back at me. I know it's coming. And I think dearly of her, and I don't deserve her. And I don't know whether she would marry me or not, but we skirt around the issue a little bit. I really care for you. I like spending time with you. I see a future with you. An amazing cook. And we talk about a lot of things, and we love to cook together. And we talk about a future down the line, possibly, you know, wanting to spend our lives together. I want to see the hands. Have I made an offer of marriage to her? Anybody think I made an offer of marriage to her? Would you please raise your hand? Then I want to identify you, because she may get a hold of you and say, see, he told you all these things. But nobody believes that that's an offer of marriage, is it? Or an agreement, right? And even though it was verbal, there still needs to be more than just talking about the subject, doesn't there?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I think I want to move on a little bit. Have any of you made major decisions in your life that you really had to think about?
Yes.
Buying a house. Anybody buy a house? Okay. Buying an expensive car. Anybody? Things like that. Is that a recipe you follow to make a major decision in your life? No? Because you're the chef. And have you bought a house?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you bought an expensive car?
Yeah.
But I bet you bought some very expensive equipment to cook your food with. Now, is there a recipe when you're going to buy that software or cookware and all of that stuff?
That's more of a method.
Right. Okay. But it's not a recipe that you knock check boxes off and go down the line.
Yes, it's not like one cup of flour.
Right. So when we're talking about a case like this. And Judge Boyce instructed us a little bit about this. And he said, you know, you're going to look at the facts and the evidence. Okay? Does anybody understand what facts and evidence are? Everybody understands that, right?
Yes. Yeah.
The pen is blue. The car is red. And you're going to hear facts. And you're going to hear evidence. But do you think, as part of making a decision, you should guess about some of the things? Is guessing involved when you're making a serious decision? And I just saw the shaking of the head, and I want to say it's 1436.
Yes.
Guessing is not part of it, is it?
No, not at all.
And the word speculate, do you think you should speculate when you're making a big decision about something?
No.
Ever?
No.
And I want to move and talk to some other people, because I don't want to feel like anybody's getting ignored here. So we'll go to 1382. What about this idea of speculation? Should we speculate about things when we're making a major decision? Should we guess? What about using a hunch? Saying, you know, I'm going to use a hunch and kind of figure out what really is going on here. Is that fair? Okay. Can all of you commit that if you're chosen as jurors, that you're not going to speculate, make a hunch or guess, and then all you're going to do is apply the facts and the evidence to the case? Can all of you raise your hand and promise? No, strike that. Commit to me. Commit to me that you're going to do that. Can all of you commit to me that you're going to do that? Raise your hand. Can I see them? Please. All of you. Thank you. Okay. Circumstances, and I guess I want to talk to you a little bit about this. Is there anyone in the jury pool who has been honest 100% of the time in their life and I've never told a white lie, a fib, or anything like that. Please show me, because I'd like to see one for the first time. In 30 years, nobody. I'm sorry. People tell untruth. They tell lies sometimes. White lies, big lies, things like that, right?
Yes.
What do you think some of the big things are that people lie about? Let's go to 1353 again.
Ooh.
How about relationships? People lie in relationships.
Absolutely.
Okay. Let's go to 1366. People lie in relationships?
Yes.
Okay. 1288. People lie in relationships?
Yes.
Okay. Let's say that, and it's not me, that somebody goes out after dinner and has a few drinks and is with somebody that they shouldn't be. And they get home and their wife goes, Where were you? Oh, I was at work. Maybe they weren't at work and doing something else. Is that a situation where you would tell the truth and say, this is where I was, this is what I was doing? Or do you think there's a chance there might be a lie going on there? Pretty good chance someone's gonna lie about that, right? And people lie about relationships, they lie about business, right? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, and they do that to sort of, nobody wants to find out if your wife or husband has something going on behind you. You would lie about that, right?
Yes.
Okay. There's an expression, and I tell some of the other jurors, and I don't know how they're taking this, but I listen to a wide variety of music because I'm old. I'm probably older than everybody in the jury. I'm pretty sure I am. All of you. Some of you have had a lot of years. And I'm a child, unfortunately, of the 70s, which means there was disco music. And if you know anything about it, exactly. And I didn't wear bell bottoms, I promise. Not a bell bottom guy. But I've listened to a lot of variety, a lot of music and different kinds of music. But I enjoy country music. It's just something.
Well,
and there's a song, the title of the song is Everything That Glitters Is Not Gold. And it talks about the interaction between a man and a woman. And I'd like to see if any of you can guess what you think that expression means. Anybody have any ideas about that? Anybody? Nobody wants to jump up. Go ahead. It's number
1271.
1271, you're right. I'm sorry.
I think probably in reference to that song, it's just because something makes you feel good or has that attraction to it. It's not always good for it. It'd be what I would say.
And I go back and I think about this all the time. And where does the song take me? Many years ago, there was a very wealthy man who was about 92 years old. He was a millionaire. And he decided he just had to marry this 18-year-old girl. And it caused a lot of problems down the line, but he went into the marriage. And I think of that because I think, the 18-year-old girl glitters. Beautiful. Wonderful. But how long did it take him to figure out that everything that glitters is not gold? And another situation is like this. Have any of you been in a job that you thought was going to be a great job? And then all of a sudden you got into the job and you realize, oh my gosh, I left my other job and now look what I've got. This likes. Anybody been there? Anybody? No? None of you have ever had a job where you, go ahead. Well, actually, we'll start with him and then we'll get to you. Go ahead, juror number 1288.
Yeah, just getting a new job where it was certain tasks or income was promised that sounded a lot better than it looks when you're doing the task.
And everything that glitters is not gold. And the difficulty is if you invest or you spend the time and go down that road and then suddenly realize, oh my, this isn't what I thought it was. And maybe you didn't have all the facts. And then I've been there. Anybody else? Jury number 1271, excuse me.
Yeah, kind of obviously same Except for everything that was promised, but you figured out that the people, the personnel around, it's not like a good spot to work, you know. So again, having that regret, you know, nothing was misconstrued. Still, you realize like this court wanted to be what I thought it was gonna be.
Or it can be worse than that. You meet somebody and you realize, oh boy, it's too late now. Look what I got stuck with. What is going on here? And juror number 977, you're very quiet, but you had made eye contact with me and it looked like you wanted to say something. Nothing? Don't want to say anything. Okay. I'm going to go into the last subject and then I'm done. Okay? It's about time, right? It's about time. Ms. Blake talked a little bit about this, and I just want some comments on this, and I appreciate juror number 1330 to talk about this a little bit. I'm going to see if some of the other folks will discuss it a little bit as well. You're going to see graphic pictures. You're going to see very, very graphic pictures. And these pictures are going to hurt your heart. I am telling you, they're going to hurt your heart. They hurt my heart. And I want to make sure that when you look at these pictures, that the immediate reaction is not to take it out on him. Can everybody at least commit to not taking it out on Chad when you look at these graphic pictures?
Yes.
Would you please just put your cards up or your hands up so I can see that? Thank you. Oh, I didn't see it. We see that in a lot of instances where media outlets, TV shows, podcasts, all of these people throw these graphic images up on the screen to make a statement. Has everybody experienced that? And the point of it is to get a reaction from you. The point of it is to cause you to become upset, and then you do something. Would everybody agree with that? But until you've heard all of the evidence and made a decision about the case, would it be fair to look at these heartbreaking images and hold them against Chad until you've heard everything said? Would that be fair? It would be fair to hold it against him? Everybody agree that no, it would not be fair to hold it against him?
Yes.
Folks, I want to thank you. I want to appreciate the time. I appreciate you being very straightforward. This has been very easy for me with you folks. You're extremely easy to talk to, and I want to thank you for that. Judge, that's all I have at this point. Thank you very much, folks. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Pryor. At this time, then, that concludes the group section of this voir dire. We are going to talk to each one of you individually, also the presence of the other jurors. So at this point, we will begin with our lowest numbered juror first, which would be juror 977. If you could remain, we'll have the other jurors excused to the jury room and brought back in one by one. Thank you. Please be seated. All right, juror 977, you're not in trouble. We're doing this with everyone.
Yeah.
We wanted to discuss different topics that are best discussed outside of the presence of other jurors. And in this case, let me just take a brief moment to review your questionnaire. You talked somewhat in your questionnaire about potentially having a hardship based on the age of your children, and you didn't, however, I think, raise your card when we went through that earlier. Could you just describe if you think you are able to serve for this time period, given your obligations?
I just wanted to be honest. I mean, it would be extremely difficult, but I mean, you could potentially make it work I came to the means of that, I guess. I was just being honest. We can find childcare, but we also own a business, so it would be extremely difficult, but I wouldn't say it would be impossible. So I was just trying to be honest about that.
You are, so you're basically self-employed?
Yeah, as in I own an insurance business.
Okay, how involved are you in the day-to-day affairs of the business?
Very involved.
If you were required to serve for this time frame, with both thinking about your children as well as the business, do you think that could become a distraction, or would you be able to set that aside and focus on evidence here? And I would note, it would take up the majority of your time, or nearly all of it, and energy mentally. However, we do intend to stop each day at 3:30 in the afternoon, which would give you some time during the days when you're not sequestered. I'll also mention there may well be a time when you would be required to be sequestered, and so you simply wouldn't be available to be with your family for a week or 2 weeks potentially. So given all that, I'll just allow if the state and defense would like to question her in relation to a potential hardship, and then we'll move on to some other issues to discuss.
You don't want to ask the hardship. We don't have any questions.
Prior.
When you talk about daycare, in addition to removing one of the two salaries in your family house by you being gone, you're going to have to pay for that daycare.
No.
You know, so there won't be a cost for you to pay for daycare?
There won't be a cost, so it would lose income because we would lose an employee, which is difficult. My husband would have to do my work.
Well, would he also be taking care of the daycare as well?
No, we would be putting that burden on my in-laws on top of what they already do.
Okay, so you're going to be placing a burden on them, but there's going to be a loss of income.
And I'm sorry, but talking about being sequestered and not becoming a distraction, that would definitely be a distraction. That would become the case for more than a day or two.
Okay, and it would almost surely be more than a day or two.
I might be kind of confused about that as far as like being away, as far as not being able to go back to our home for more than a week or two.
All right, and counsel, I don't want to necessarily reveal more personal information than necessary, other than indicating very young children involved here with this family.
Judge, I intend to make a motion.
Go ahead, Mr. Pryor.
Judge, I'm going to move to exclude. They are very young children, and the need to be away from children of that age for more than a day or 2 days, I view as a hardship. So I would move to exclude this juror on the basis of hardship.
Response from the state.
You know, I'm not certain that I've heard from the juror that she views that aspect of the hardship. I think we've heard that she is important for her family and her children. But to me, from the juror's last comment, she doesn't really understand the expectation, potential expectation of sequestration. And so I'm not sure, based on what the defense's motion was, that there's grounds to excuse her for hardship just because her children happen to be 1 or 3 years old.
All right, Mr. Wexham. The questionnaire did state you would have a hardship, and I guess I just want to ask you that then, knowing that that is a very likely possibility or real possibility that would occur in this case, where you would be sequestered away from your family for some time. How do you think that would impact you and your ability to focus solely on determining this case?
It would impact me greatly.
In what way?
Negatively.
Cause you to be distracted from focusing on the evidence and the law here?
Yes, and I'm away from my family for more than, 8 to 3:30, I believe, longer on some days. Then yes, it would impact me negatively.
Okay, and I'm talking about that sequestration time, if it was two straight weeks.
Yes.
I am going to sustain the challenge based on a hardship for juror 977. And I do very much appreciate your willingness to try to make these arrangements and accommodations. This is an unusually long and complex trial. So not all are like this, and thank you so much for taking the time to accurately fill out your questionnaire, return today, and provide these candid responses to the court. All right, thank you. You can be excused. Counsel, at some point, I've got to address a couple of concerns with our jury commissioner briefly, but we would do that during a break. We're in this individual section. We've got a ways to go. Is this a logical time maybe for a mid-afternoon break?
The state believes it will be, Your Honor. Thank you.
I appreciate that.
Very well. We'll take a break right now. We'll advise the jurors also that we're on break, and then we'll come back on continuing this juror number 1185. All right, we're back on the record after our mid-afternoon break. KCR 2221-1623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell, conducting individual court dire of these jurors, and our next juror to be brought in will be juror number 1185. All right, juror number 1185's return, and upon review of this questionnaire, I don't know if there's any further follow-up or dire needed on case knowledge, bias, or hardship. Does the state intend a question on any of those areas?
I actually just have one question, one area of questioning just on one of the standard proof questions, if that's all right, Your Honor.
Okay. Why don't you start there with your inquiry? The court doesn't have any of my own voir dire at this point.
Thank you so much, Your Honor. Good afternoon. On page 8 of your questionnaire, if you could turn to it really quick, just so you can refer to it.
Yeah.
It's question 2, subsection C. You had checked yes, that you feel that the burden of proof should be higher than proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And you had checked yes. If the judge provides you an instruction, well, actually, before I go there, could you kind of explain your thoughts on that?
Yes. So at first, I'd like to say I filled this out with after working all night, and I may have had zero sleep.
Yes.
So let's see what I wrote here.
Yeah, take a moment if you need to, sir. That's totally fine. And there's no right or wrong answers. We're just kind of trying to gauge your thoughts on this stuff.
Yeah, I think that, you know, with this kind of thing, the proof should be beyond, absolutely certain.
Absolutely certain.
Absolutely certain.
So if you were to receive an instruction that said proof beyond a reasonable doubt is not a possible doubt or an imaginary doubt, was that something that you'd struggle with if you want absolute certainty?
Perhaps, yes.
Okay. Sir, so did you have anything to add to that?
Oh, no.
Okay. So if I'm understanding correctly, you hold a conviction that proof should be beyond any possible doubt whatsoever.
Yes.
And if I'm understanding you correctly, you'd have a difficult time following the judge's instruction if the instruction was proof beyond a reasonable doubt is not a possible doubt or an imaginary doubt. Is that fair to say?
So,
it's okay. It's totally okay. It's totally okay.
I'm not sure I'm just fully understanding.
Okay. So let me ask you this. Are you saying that, let me ask you a different question. Even if you held a personal belief that there should be proof beyond any and all doubt, not even like even proof beyond even a possible doubt, proof beyond even an imaginary doubt, would you struggle to follow an instruction that was different than that?
No.
Okay. I have no additional questions, Your Honor.
No questions, Judge.
Okay. And I do want to just be clear on that point then for this juror. I did in the beginning of what I was going through today with you, read an instruction, and it is the instruction that you would be given in this case. I just want to read that instruction again about what reasonable doubt, how it's defined in this case. And the instruction reads as follows. A reasonable doubt is not a mere possible or imaginary doubt. It is a doubt based on reason and common sense. It may arise from a careful and impartial consideration of all the evidence or from lack of evidence. And that's the definition part of that. Would you be willing to follow an instruction that is the standard you're to apply to the evidence in this case?
Yes. So using real tangible things.
Just that instruction and That again is the definition, and you would be able to follow that instruction?
Yes.
Okay, I don't have a further question on that topic. Anything further from either side on that? All right, at this time then, without additional board hour on that, let's next take a look at the section of your questionnaire that is your attitudes regarding the death penalty, and where you've indicated you were operating on little sleep when you filled this out, if you don't mind turning to page 12 of your questionnaire. And so when you filled that out, you were just asking your opinions and attitude. Now that you are a prospective juror in this case, I'm going to advise you that it may in fact be necessary for you to make a determination in regard to the imposition of the death penalty or some other penalty in this case. And when you're considering that, you have to consider that as it should be done, any penalty you are considering should be considered as if it is absolute and would be carried out in the case. So with that context in mind, in your answers you stated right in the middle of that page 12, the question, do you support or oppose the death penalty, you said you would support. Is that the way you feel here today?
Yes.
Okay. If you please look then at page 13, you had a set of choices, 7, to accurately describe the way you feel about the death penalty. There's a mark there, I think, closest to C. Am I to interpret that as C being your choice?
Yes.
Okay. C is a statement that says, I generally favor the death penalty, but I would base a decision to impose it on the facts, law, and instructions in the case. Is that the way you would feel about the death penalty still here today?
Yes.
All right. Are you in favor of the death penalty in every case where a murder has been committed?
No.
Okay. Just one final question from me then. Are any views you have on the death penalty going to prevent or substantially impair you and your ability to be a juror in this case and to follow the court's instructions relating to the death penalty?
No.
Okay, that concludes my voir dire on that topic. Does the state have a voir dire?
No, I don't. Thank you, sir.
Any voir dire from the defense?
No, Judge.
Okay, juror number 1185, that concludes your individual voir dire. I'll have you return to the jury room with the bailiff. Thank you. We'll next talk to juror 1219. Will either counsel have any inquiry for 1219 on hardship or bias?
The state won't, Your Honor. No, Judge.
Okay, thank you.
Judge, could I have just a minute? For some reason, it's not letting me back.
Yes.
May I have a moment for defense counsel?
Yes.
It's a minute.
It's a large,
you know, it's
special.
Got it, Judge. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Sorry. We'll have juror 1219 brought in. All right, juror 1219 has returned. We have some additional questioning for you outside the presence of the other jurors. I believe you've got a copy of the questionnaire you filled out. If you do, would you please turn to page 12 of that? And that is the section of the questionnaire discussing your attitudes regarding the death penalty. When you filled out your questionnaire last week, do you recall thinking through these questions on the death penalty and providing these answers?
Yes.
I'm going to advise you in this case, it may be necessary for you to make a determination in regard to the imposition of the death penalty or some other penalty. And when you consider it, consider that it should be done as if it is absolute and will be carried out in the case when you're thinking about these responses. Knowing that, and with the time that's passed since last week, is there any change or amendment you would have to those answers, or would they still be true and accurate today?
No changes.
Okay. On page 12, you had a choice of, do you support or oppose the death penalty? And you said support. Is that still your position here today?
Yes.
If you would please turn to page 13. On that page, you had a set of choices that describe the way you feel and what's most accurate, you picked C. C reads, I generally favor the death penalty, but I would base a decision to impose it on the facts, law, and instructions in the case. Is that still the way you feel about the death penalty?
Yes.
And you would be willing to follow any instructions about it in this case?
Yes.
All right, the next question I'll have then is, are you in favor of the death penalty in every case where a murder has been committed?
No.
Okay, and finally, I'll ask you, is there anything you think or we should know about your views on the death penalty that could prevent or substantially impair your ability to serve as a juror in this case and follow the court's instructions about the death penalty? All right, that concludes the voir dire of the court on that topic. Does the state have any voir dire?
The state has no questions, Your Honor.
No questions, Judge.
All right, Juror 1219, that concludes our individual voir dire with you. If you'd please return to the jury room with the bailiff, we'll call in another juror and let you know what's happening once we return you.
Thank you.
1271 will be up next. I know there was some tech issue here. Are the parties able to access that questionnaire? All right. So I don't know if it was advised, but 1271. Okay, thank you. All right, juror number 1271 has returned for additional individual voir dire questioning. I'd note that this juror does have some case information and raised their card when asked if they did know something about the case. So we'll discuss that, and you can certainly openly discuss any facts you know about that here with the other jurors not present. There wasn't any indication that there may be a hardship, so I don't have any of my own voir dire in terms of bias. I'll allow the state to ask me questions about that, followed by the defense, who will do that for the state.
I will, Your Honor.
Go ahead, Mr. Wicks.
Thank you. Sir, in reference to what the court had just said, you had made some early responses that you do have some case information. Can you just kind of give us a nutshell of what you understand about this case before you came here?
Yeah, and I didn't know if it was the right time to ask the question, but I assume most people have some. That was kind of my take with it, is that I've just heard news clips, stuff like that. I know there was, I've heard Lori Fallow, the other person that you guys maybe mentioned, possibly a conspiracy. I don't know that name. I've seen a lot of, like, just news clips that have popped up on it.
On that point, I understood you said you didn't know this other person. Did you see or learn enough that you even remember the names of the victims, the alleged victims?
It kind of rings a bell right here. I couldn't list it right now. I know that it's two kids. I know that just like random little tidbits that maybe Hawaii was in part of it or something like that, but not like I don't know a ton of details about the case. It's just I obviously have, you know, sometimes sit and see news clips and stuff like that.
Did you happen to watch any documentaries like Netflix or anything like that?
No, it was just like news. It was just news clips that, you know, it was obviously a long time that the spam was unfolding. So it was just constantly you're like, someone's maybe saying something like, how did you hear about that? And, that's about it. I just don't know the details.
Do you feel, based on whatever you did gather from what you're referencing, do you feel like you could set aside anything that you have learned and freely listen to evidence as it comes in and then be impartial in rendering whatever decision you might make as a juror?
Absolutely. Like I said, I don't know enough to even be like, really put a stance on.
Okay. The last question on this. On your questionnaire on page 19, you had noted, I don't know enough of what happened to form any ideas, and I also believe in innocence until proven guilty. What did you mean by that?
Just the fact that even, you know, hearing it, I'm a firm believer in the fact that, you know, like, I'm just listening to random clips, like you really don't know the whole story until sometimes you're good. Just that's all I was saying. That is the little bit that I have heard. Absolutely, doesn't really matter until you sit down.
So is it fair enough to say that you're going to presume his innocence until the state proves him guilty?
Absolutely.
Thank you. No, I don't have any more questions.
All right. Questions, Judge. Okay. The next issue we'll discuss then, juror number 1271, relates to your attitudes regarding the death penalty. If you do have a copy of your questionnaire there, this is on page 12 and 13 where we're looking. And I am going to advise you that in this case, it may be necessary for you to make a determination in regard to the imposition of the death penalty or some other penalty. And remember, any penalty you consider should be done as if it is absolute and will be carried out in the case. So thinking about that, you did provide answers here. Do you believe the answers you provided are still accurate in the way you feel here today?
Yes.
Okay, absolutely. You were asked if you support or oppose the death penalty on page 12, and you said you support it. Is that still the way you feel?
Yes.
Okay, on page 13, there was a series of choices, seven, that go into some more detail about what you think most accurately represents the way you feel. And you selected option C, which says, I generally favor the death penalty, but I would base a decision to impose it on the facts, law, and instructions in the case. Is that still representative of how you feel about the death penalty today?
It is.
Are you in favor of the death penalty in every case where a murder has been committed?
No, I'm not.
All right. And finally, then, is there anything about your views or beliefs in reference to the death penalty that you think could prevent or substantially impair your ability to serve as a juror in this case and follow the court's instructions?
No.
Okay. Thank you for your responses. Does the state have any more, Dyer?
We do not, Your Honor.
Nothing, Judge.
All right, that concludes the voir dire of juror number 1271. We'll have you return to the jury room and the bailiff to give you further instructions. Next up will be juror 1288, and we'll have them brought in. Does counsel intend any voir dire in this one in relation to hardship or bias?
Yes, Your Honor. This is a juror that we've left off some questioning to pick up again during the individual.
Okay, correct. Thank you. All right, juror number 1288, thank you for returning. We are reviewing your questionnaire here. There were some concerns raised in the group voir dire that state's going to ask about. In addition, if there's any other questions that could relate to a hardship, you can inquire there as well. The state will conduct individual voir dire this year, then the defense. Ms. White, is that you?
Yes, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Juror 1288, thanks for sticking with us. I know we'd had a conversation about graphic images, and I said maybe we'll pick it up in individual. So that's where I wanted to start with you. I know I kind of had put you on the spot, and you may or may not have thought too much about it before coming in today. But I believe where we left off, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you did have concerns about your ability to view any images of that nature that you may have a reaction to, and then just weigh them in relation to other evidence. You probably had a little more time to think about it. Do you still have that concern?
I think I'm concerned about it. I think I want to be impartial and weigh it accurately. I do think I would struggle in associating that with my own personal situation. So that's,
yeah. Like we did talk about, and I won't get into specifics, but we did talk about you have some children. Do you think, because you've said you want to be impartial though, and obviously as you look at evidence and give it the weight you think it's due, you may weigh that out how you feel appropriate. Do you feel like something about seeing those images would make you automatically impugn guilt to the defendant without having heard all, before you've heard all the evidence and weighed it out? Would you automatically draw that assumption or conclusion, do you think?
I don't know if I would automatically assign guilt, but I think I would I worry I'd be a little emotional in my wanting to seek justice.
And that's fair. Do you think if instructed by the judge that you were to wait to form any opinion until having heard all the evidence and in reaching your conclusion, do you think you would be able to, even though you may have an emotional reaction, which is normal, do you think you would still be able to follow the court's instruction and wait until the end to make that final decision for yourself?
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you. I don't have any additional questions on this.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Pryor.
I guess I just want to clarify.
Microphone, Mr. Pryor.
I'd like to clarify a little bit, if you don't mind. You see some graphic pictures, and I talked about that a little bit. You're going to have to block out having some sort of reaction and putting the blame on Chad. Is that what I'm hearing?
That I would have to block it out, is that right? Yes.
So in other words, you would be predisposed, or bad word, you would be upfront. If you saw these pictures, you would instantly say, you know, I want to blame him for this. But you'd have to stop yourself and wait until you saw the rest of the evidence. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying it would be difficult for me to... It would be difficult for me to not make an immediate emotional reaction of wanting to assign guilt to somebody.
Okay. And that's what, and again, I want to remind you, there's no wrong or right answer here, because I really appreciate your honesty. I'm grateful that you're being honest. And so I'll restate what I said. You would have you would have a very difficult time not assigning guilt to somebody after looking at those pictures, and it would have an impact on you while you were deliberating. Is that fair?
I think so, yes.
Okay. And don't take this personally, sir.
No, please don't.
Judge, I'm going to move for cause on this. I'm worried about potential risk here.
All right, response from the state.
Your Honor, the state would submit to the court on this one.
All right. Well, this is why we conduct these sometimes individually. Juror 1288, a few of those responses by sharing a concern of the defense that this is evidence that's likely to be admitted in the trial that may affect you in a particular way, to shift a burden away from the defendant to which he's entitled. And so I appreciate you really thinking through. I can tell you very carefully considered your responses to these questions, and believe that the challenge is best sustained in this point in our interest of trying to obtain the most impartial jury we can. So thank you very much for filling out your questionnaire and returning today. I'm going to sustain the motion to strike, and juror 1288 will be stricken for bias in this case. You can go ahead and go and return your questionnaire to the bailiff, and we'll move on to our next juror. Thank you. Let's talk to 1330. All right, juror 1330 is returned for individual voir dire. Thank you for coming back in. We're reviewing the questionnaire now. And we're going to be asking you about the knowledge you have about this case, in addition to possibly other topics. Because the other jurors aren't here, we wish for you to discuss this in as much detail as necessary to tell us what you know. And with that in mind, looking through the questionnaire and that you've acknowledged you have some case knowledge, I'm going to have the state begin with their individual voir dire as to any possible bias, and then we'll move on to the defense. Ms. Fady.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon, ma'am.
Hi.
I just have a few quick questions for you about media exposure in this case. So in your questionnaire, you indicated that you come across some news on TikTok, online, but that it just kind of come up with it. You hadn't sought it out. Is that accurate?
The only one I sought out was the Netflix special.
The Netflix special. Okay. And you watched the Netflix special?
About a year ago.
About a year ago. Okay.
So it's not completely clear.
Okay. Would you, and this might sound like an odd question, but would you kind of just tell us what you remember about the Netflix special?
I remember there were several suspicious deaths. I remember that seeing aerial footage of presumably the area of land that they were found. I remember seeing the last photo of them alive. That's about it.
And the area of land that they were found, do you know where that was?
Near Idaho Falls, I think, area.
Do you know who owned that property?
My understanding is that it was the defendant.
Okay. So having watched that Netflix special, at the time that you watched it, did it cause you to form any opinions?
Well, I mean, everything you see on TV is formulated and produced for the benefit of the pockets of the people who own the TV.
So
I understand that. Now, would it sway me? Not necessarily, because they don't really care whether they're telling barely truths, half truths, you know, approximate truth today's kind of thing for the sake of money. I wouldn't say that I'm personally swayed by anything I see online when it's a for-profit situation.
Of course. I certainly appreciate that perspective. I did notice on page 19 when they asked if you could put out, when the questionnaire asked if you would be able to put out of your mind what you had read and heard, you'd initially check no, but then you crossed it out and wrote yes. Was that something you've been kind of wrestling with a little bit?
No, I totally checked the wrong box.
Oh, okay. All right.
It was one of those where I think I read something and then I checked it and I went, oh, whoops, that's totally the wrong box. So it wasn't a rethink of the same question.
Okay. And I realize this might all sound kind of silly since I'm the prosecutor in this case, but, you know, we all have an interest in making sure that Mr. Daybell gets a fair trial.
Correct.
He's innocent until the state proves him guilty.
Yeah.
And so I think thank you, madam. The concern that I guess I'm kind of wrestling with a little bit is, you know, you talked about how emotional it would be to look at some of these photographs.
Yes.
So do you think that it would be very difficult to look at those photographs and still put out of your mind what you saw in that Netflix special?
I'd like to say that I can do that, but I don't think anyone truly knows what they would do until the moment they've seen those pictures.
Okay.
I've never seen pictures that graphic. Most of the stuff I watch is censored to a certain degree.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank
so you can assume what you might do, and I would think that I would still be partial to do.
Okay.
I like to believe that I would be.
But as you sit here today, you're kind of struggling with that.
You know, you can tell yourself and you can say, you know what, I'm going to remain partial regardless of what I see. But I don't think anybody really knows. When something happens to them for the very first time in their life, what the outcome will be.
Thank you so much. Just one moment. And I want to thank you very much for your honest answers. Your Honor, the state, with all due appreciation for this juror's honesty, the state would move to excuse her due to the exposure that she's had in this case.
All right, response from the defense.
And Judge, I've struggled with this because she's been extremely honest. I appreciate how
forthright. I want to be honest.
And you have been. And very forthright. And I've struggled a little bit with this. But in the end, I think, Judge, I agree with the state. I'm worried that those pictures are going to influence you, and I'm not sure I have guarantees that it's not going to be a problem. And considering what's at stake, it bothers me a little bit, but this is nothing personal.
I'd like to say that I know how I would react, but I've never had that happen.
And that's what
you can't know.
Judge, I'd go along with the motion to strike.
Very well. The court's considered the request to strike juror 133-0 on biased grounds based on previous exposure to case information. Upon review of the questionnaire, in particular, having viewed the Netflix documentary, which will contain potential evidence that would return in this case, I share that concern of counsel, and so I'll sustain the motion to strike Chair 1330, thank you so much for coming in and participating in the process. You discharged your service as a juror in this case with the sincere thanks of the court.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll next talk to 1353. All right, juror number 1353 has returned for individual voir dire. There were some issues brought up in terms of voir dire in the group when counsel was discussing the conspiracy charges in this case, and I indicated we'd delve into that further individually. In addition, in this case, I don't know that this juror had expressed any knowledge of the facts, but there is that issue to go through as well on a hardship. We didn't really have anything to discuss there. I'll allow the state to proceed with any additional voir dire relating to those questions that came up, and then I'll allow the defense to do their voir dire on that as well.
Thank you, Your Honor. Juror 1353, you remember we were talking about the conspiracy?
Yes.
And so we talked about the judge would give you the recipe or the instructions, and they'd have certain elements. And with conspiracy, the judge had already said conspiracy would be an agreement between two or more persons to commit a crime. Would you have any problem with that?
It would have to be shown, proven, that there was an actual agreement, not just words spoken.
So when you say actual agreement, what would an actual agreement look like to you, if you could describe it?
Transfer of money. An action that would suggest that there was an agreement made.
And if the judge were to give you an instruction that says what agreement is defined as, so again, kind of like a recipe, the judge is going to tell you what an agreement means. So it could be various things, and it could be implied. Would you be able to follow that instruction in determining whether or not an agreement had been reached? Would you have concerns with that?
No.
If you're instructed on it?
No.
And then if you felt that the state had in fact met the burden of proving there was an agreement based on the court's instruction of what an agreement is, and that that's an element, and then another part of the instruction was that even if just one of those people do an act in furtherance, so one person does something to carry out the crime or to attempt to carry out the crime, would you then be able to say if there was an agreement, you could hold anyone involved in that agreement accountable?
I would have to ask who's on trial. If the person was on trial, there was an agreement, then I would have to agree with somebody that I don't know about, and they agree to it, I have no idea. So I'd have to say no.
So, and I guess maybe I can explain it a little bit better. So the judge had talked about a couple other names coming up. So we had the name Lori Vallow-Daybell and Alex Cox mentioned by the court. And the court said you wouldn't concern yourself with their guilt or innocence or any proceedings that they may or may not have going on. So if you knew you weren't going to consider that, and you're only considering the defendant, and you felt the state did prove that there was an agreement, but maybe you didn't feel the state proved that the defendant was the one that committed an overt act, but you believed the state met their burden with one of the other alleged co-conspirators, would you be able to follow the jury instruction regarding conspiracy to say if there's an agreement and one of the parties to the agreement commits an overt act, you could find someone guilty?
You have to restate the question because I'm confused. If you're saying that the person that's on trial has agreed to a contract or an oath, then I think we should be concerned about that person. If there were more people that were involved with a conspiracy, their actions should be tried separately. And so I'm always willing to listen to what the court has to say and is in charge, but that's beyond my scope to know and to understand what somebody else's intentions are.
And if you were able to hear evidence regarding some of those other individuals' actions or alleged actions, and you were told you could consider those actions as part of this trial, do you feel you would then be able to consider what actions someone else took in furtherance of the conspiracy?
Once again, I'm confused by the question. Because what I'm saying is, if we have somebody on trial for a crime, they should be proved guilty or innocent on what they've done. So somebody else talking about doing something or not doing something, notice it can be proven that they actually did that act. And if it's not to be allowed in this courtroom by the court, then that would be thrown out. But if it is allowed, then it's allowed. And if it's allowed by the judge, then I would have to agree that I can listen to that. But if it's not allowed by the judge, then it shouldn't be presented. Does that make sense?
Yes, I think I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
So it sounds like you would be willing to follow the instructions of the court.
Yes.
And if the court allows certain evidence in, you would consider all the evidence that's presented to you in making a determination.
Absolutely.
And so do you believe if you think the state meets a burden of showing there was an agreement, of proving that you could then, if the court told you you could consider actions of another individual that may have taken those in furtherance of the conspiracy in reaching a final verdict?
Yes.
I don't have anything additional.
All right, thank you, Ms. Blake. Mr. Pryor.
It really comes down to a simple thing. The judge gives you instructions, you're gonna follow them, aren't you?
Yes, sir.
Nothing else, Judge, thank you.
All right, thank you. Without additional voir dire on those topics, then the court's going to move on to the part of your questionnaire that dealt with your attitudes regarding the death penalty. So juror number 1353, do you remember coming in last week and going through that part of your questionnaire?
Yes.
Okay, and for your reference, we're looking at page 12, is that whole section about attitudes regarding the death penalty. I'm going to advise you in this case, it may be necessary for you to make a determination in regard to the imposition of the death penalty or some other penalty. And remember, any penalty you consider should be done as if it is absolute and will be carried out in the case. With that in mind, I'd like to look at your responses, a few of them. You had a choice of do you support or oppose the death penalty, and you said support. Do you recall answering that way?
Yes.
Is that still the way you feel right now?
Yes.
On the next page, you had 7 different choices to select from, which one would describe most accurately the way you feel. You selected choice D, which says, I'm generally opposed to the death penalty, but I believe I can put aside my feelings against the death penalty and impose it if it is called for by the facts, law, and instructions in the case. Is that still the way you feel about the death penalty as well?
Yes.
Okay. Are you in favor of the death penalty in every case where a murder has been committed?
No.
Okay. Is there anything about any of your thoughts or views or feelings about the death penalty that you think could prevent or substantially impair your ability to serve in this case and follow instructions on that?
No, sir.
All right, thank you so much for your responses. Does the state have any voir dire on that issue?
No, Your Honor, thank you.
Nothing further, Judge, thank you.
All right, juror 1353, that concludes your individual voir dire. We'll have you return with the bailiff.
Judge, I'm wondering, just to keep the record clear, the state had made a motion to excuse juror 1353 for cause. I think given the additional answers and information provided, the state would withdraw that request.
Very well. Without a challenge, then we'll be passed for cause. Thank you for clarifying the record, Ms. Blake, and juror, you can return with the bailiff. And while we're waiting for our next juror, which will be 1366, Something I hadn't mentioned previously with this group, but the jurors in this group did all return their affirmations, and they were all okay, with the exception of the one we discussed on the record previously. Those will be contained in the case. All right, juror number 1366, thank you for returning. We do have some individual questioning to take up with you outside the presence of the other jurors. In this particular questionnaire, the court didn't see any concern necessarily of a potential hardship. However, there may be some questions on either side of bias, and so I'll allow Board Dyer on that topic and then move on to our next topic if we're still questioning. So does the state have any questions for this juror in relation to any bias?
Just briefly, Your Honor.
Go ahead, Mr. Wood.
Juror 1366, just a reminder, there's no right or wrong answers here. Just tell us what you're thinking, how you're feeling. It sounds like you've seen some media connected to this case. Is that fair?
I've seen headlines.
Headlines. Okay. So have you read articles? Or
if I did, it was so long ago, honestly, I don't remember. I just really don't met headlines from living locally.
And
there's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.